Once Upon a Time in the West. Ah, God, I love that movie. I just love the soundtrack of Jason Robards. Cuts himself shaving, like, the first time he's about to shave for, like, a long time.
And then he
just folds the razor up and sets it down. It's like, no, I'm not going to be shaving.
The way that movie begins is fantastic, too. I absolutely love when something like that happens to me. Because, like, you think about Westerns, and you think about this cliche.
Oh, yeah. It blows away
those three dudes.
No, it was four.
Four?
Yeah. I think it was four. And there's only four horses.
Yeah.
And they're like, sorry, looks like we didn't bring a horse for you. He's like, I think you brought three horses too many. smokes them.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is good stuff. And Henry Fonda's the black hat, the bad guy.
Yeah.
And with the shootout at the end, it's just built up crazy. I haven't seen Good and the Bad, the Ugly all the way through. I've seen like the beginning and the end or something. Because that stuff's on TV so ubiquitously that you end up catching lots of pieces of it that you never...
Yeah, you know, those are great. Those, I don't know, Sergio Leone stuff is like...
pretty theatrical.
Totally is, and you know, I did have a problem with Once Upon a Time in the West, which was that
it was way too long and
all that stuff. Like, you know,
I liked it for that, but it definitely felt more like an opera or something.
Yeah,
pretty
and,
big.
And then you know, the same thing with The Good, Bad, and the Ugly is like the ultimate of those of the spaghetti western, which in Once Upon a Time in the West isn't a spaghetti western, but
kind of is
almost. But it, you can tell it was more like artistically kind of. You know,
yeah.
It was meant. I think it was meant to have more thematically in it also.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's the whole thing about the railroad and the guy that's dying.
Yeah,
that runs the railroad.
One thing I think is cool about those type of westerns, especially revisionist ones, that it's usually set in like the Civil War era.
Yeah.
And there's something about that, like this, the background of the Civil War, and like these dudes who are just like these low down drifters.
It's like what happened in the West when the Civil War was really the relevant parts of the country, which were the states.
And then these other areas, these territories where it had nothing to do with them.
The outside of it,
you know, the federals, you know, they can't be. They don't have the energy to be concerned with the lawlessness that's going on.
And that's an interesting time period. The whole lawlessness thing is definitely big. That's why I think a lot of good sci-fi, it borrows from Westerns heavily because that's what's going on. Like, I mean, Cowboy Bebop, they're called cowboys for a reason because they're like, they bring in the stragglers because the world is so big and so crazy that it's got all these lawless pockets and it's just more efficient to just put a bounty on somebody's head than it is to
have a police force, any sort of action, anything is really kind of just based on westerns. I mean, you've always heard the Star Wars thing, which is but I mean, that's more related
to the old style myths. I mean,
it is the myth thing.
Everyone's heard that a million times.
The archetype
of the hero's journey and all But I mean, like. The Western aspect of there being pockets of lawlessness because you're at such a distance, you're at that new frontier, is pretty relevant in a lot of good science fiction. But then, and here's where it comes back around, and historically, and this is where my big whole thing is, if I'm ever going to go the academic route for cinema, is, you've got Westerns, started, let's say, in the 30s or so, or even before that.
Probably before, yeah.
Well, yeah, I would say before. And even as a genre, or historically what's going on to parallel that, the Western theme is big. Then you get a little bit of war with World War I. Then you get film noir. Then you get the other war pictures. Then you get sort of a revisioned film noir that I wouldn't quite call postmodern, but it's definitely getting there. And this is the stuff of the 50s. And then you get this neo-noir, definite post thing going on. And that's going on in the 70s, and it's continuing now, when everything's just essentially fallen into the soup of postmodernism. Mm-hmm. But what happens is you get the outlaw character in Westerns is either not an outlaw, it's high noon and he's a sheriff, but the society is still... not going to go with him, so he's still kind of an outsider.
Mm.
Or he is an outlaw, and he rides off into the sunset at shame, and because there's no place for him in that world anymore, or ever, there really is no place for somebody that breaks the rules of society. And that's necessary in that world. the society is that unclean, so there's no place for you. You're not going to get married, you're not going to settle down, you're not going to move to San Francisco and start a profitable dry goods business. You know, which is, I guess, more realistic. You probably would do that,
right.
You know, eventually, or maybe there's no place for you. And then you get into noir, and noir is the urban darkness and decay. It's the cities where things are so complex and there's just known lawlessness going on. And there's people that are operating within that. In this case, usually the hard-boiled detective, who is essentially the modern anti-hero. Or
if you think about like Double Indemnity and something like Sunset,
oh well, that's
Sunset
a
Boulevard.
That's
like,
strict genre noir.
Yeah,
style noir.
And that's about like an individual's morals more often. Really gray area morals and like what that happens.
Those are. I mean, maybe I really mean westerns, and then I mean the detective noir genre.
Because
the Maltese Falcon, the Big Sleep, and then all the way, and then World War II happens. And this is sociologically. I mean, I wrote a lot of this in when I was talking about anti-heroes with Raiders of the Lost Ark with Indiana Jones. World War II comes along, and everybody joins the cause. They go off and they fight. All these men, they went off and they fought after suffering through the Great Depression. They come back, and then they go to Levittown. They go to suburbia. There's a domestication and an emasculation going on. There's a leaving the farm for the suburb, and leaving the cities for the suburb. So in both cases, a lot of these guys are no longer, you know, what they are. And so, what do you do with this character, this urban, hard-boiled detective, or even the Western character? He becomes completely marginalized, and he either becomes a joke or he becomes an antiquated thing. This is the Wild Bunch, even though I haven't seen it. What you're saying right there, there's no place for him in society. This is the Searchers in the 50s. John Wayne. John Wayne is the John Wayne character, but it's now apparent how his racism and his old style approaches to things. There's no place for him. He's obsessive. He's Captain Ahab. He goes. He finds the girl. He brings her back. The loving family, and there's no place for him. He can't enter the threshold, and it's powerful stuff. And that's it for him. And a good one for the noir detective genre is the Mike Hammer macho guy, and it's called Kiss Me Deadly. Deadly does with Mike Hammer, who ends up being an idiot. He goes against the cop. He doesn't tell the cop what's going on, and then it ends up being a nuclear situation. This is a whole new world you're living in now, buddy, where we have to trust some form of legitimate government or something, because there's some dangerous stuff. It's too big for you, you dumb mook. But these are all ways that the society starts to say, hey, be domesticated. There's no place for you to be a tough guy anymore. You know, you went and fought a war, take a break.
Yeah.
And the guys who wouldn't saw all of this and really fought the World War II probably didn't want that. They didn't want that craziness anymore. And so then it comes into neo-noir, which is back to where the anti-hero can start to be seen a little bit more positively, but even then it's not that positive. It's so informed with heavy-handed cynicism, basically based on just this collapse of the romance about society. Of government institutions and so forth. I mean, you can relate it to Watergate and the Vietnam conflict, or even prior to that, there's stuff going on. I mean, McCarthyism and all kinds of other things. And Chinatown is probably the first neo-noir, though in a technical sense, I don't know if it would be, because it's set as a period movie, but the whole point is that there's government corruption for water rights, right?
Yeah, right.
So there you go. You've got government corruption, you've got the private eye going outside of the law in a lot of ways. And then in the end, totally nihilistic ending of Chinatown. There you go. Blade Runner, you've got... I mean, it's a science fiction movie, but it's definitely a noir because it's a guy that has to go out and take out certain... He's killing people because that's what the law says is okay, but then he kind of doesn't. But so it makes him definitely a fringe society because no one wants to talk about those people that go out and kill the androids that are, you know, their slave race. And that's kind of where we are now. I mean, this is where does our society want to go with it? And I'm looking at a lot of the films that are coming out now, and I'm not sure what the hell to make of them. Like, I don't think Shia LaBeouf is an anti-hero. And I don't think I mean, I don't know what the hell Will Smith is supposed to do. Is he just supposed to be so cool for school that he just comes around and ruins every possibly good book ever written?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Oh, like, just ruin iRobot. Let's take Asimov and ruin it. Is I Am Legend going to be just the most terrible thing
ever? And I noticed on the poster for it that he looks, he's making a face that I haven't seen Will Smith make before, which is supposed to be my, you know, I'm upset face, I guess.
Pensive face or something?
Yeah, I've never really seen it on him before.
Isn't he actually, like, he doesn't have facial hair in that one, does he? He does look a little different. I think, like, there's a point at which you're like, oh, what do you know? He looks older or,
right,
like,
totally,
more
yeah.
mature. He looks less like a rock star
totally,
or whatever.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But, I mean, that's my big thing. And that's, is now we've got so many genres to draw from, but that those characters, those outside characters, are still, to me, the most interesting. Because what do you do with them? And what happens to them at the end? Do you just kill them off at the end? Or... maybe right after the sunset,
yeah.
Who knows? Which relates to Westerns and relates to Straw Dogs and all this other stuff. It's the guy, I mean, well, here's this. Let's definitely relate it back. Because we did get a little meandery there. And I essentially threw down my giant thesis on modern day masculine film theory or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The David character is essentially the middle-aged man, you know, in a marriage type situation. He's reasonably domesticated, reasonably soft-spoken. You know, he's not the kind of guy that's going to beat his wife. He's not the kind of guy that's going to be a bad father. You know, he might let his kids get away with some crap, but most good fathers usually kind of understand when they need it and when they don't.
Right.
And it's kind of, well, that's the point, right? Isn't that the point of the suburbs? And the point of all this other stuff is that you can reach that point where you can just be a reasonably peaceful... sure, you're going to have your own neuroses, and you're going to put stuff off, and you're going to have little arguments with your wife about this and that, but it doesn't all need to be about, you know, now you need to kill somebody, because that's the only way you can show that you're a human being or a man. So there's an interesting commentary in that. Well, is the point that you should be able to calm down, or that you can never calm down?
Right.
And once you do break from that, what happens to you next? Like, is she going to be more attracted to him now that he did that badass
right,
thing?
Yeah.
Is she going to be like all over him now for a little while? And then is he going to be able to go back to being a mathematician? Or is he going to be like fucking scarred from what he's done to the point where it's going to bother him?
How can I practice math?
How can I do math after?